Okay, I want to welcome everybody to today's webinar. This is Earl Bell. I'm with Republic Magazine, and we have a very special guest today, and I had not heard of him until, I don't know, I guess it was maybe, I think it's been maybe close to 2 months ago. I went to a conference, and at that conference, he was one of the speakers, and I believe they may have an interview on their site as well as a lot of other really fascinating information. So I'll give their site out so that you'll have that. It's projectcamelot.org. So you may want to check that out at some point. That's very interesting. But they had a conference in the Los Angeles area, and I heard Duncan O'Finnion then. And just in the way of a very short introduction, he's an author and he's a martial artist who was part of a secret government program known as Project Talent. And Project Talent is a subproject of the notorious MK Ultra program, which used severe trauma to split his personality into several alternate personalities, one of whom was trained and enhanced to become a super soldier known as a Mega Unit 197. Now, I know this sounds very unusual, and for those of you who haven't run into this type of thing before, it may be like, what? How can this, what is this? How can this be? But I want to bring to you now Duncan O'Finnion and ask him if maybe he'll give us a little bit more of his background and kind of bring us through from how things began on up to the point of today. So, Duncan, if you would, welcome to the call. Welcome to the webinar.
Well, I'm still going around saying what? Very good, Don. That's a good introduction to say, you know, people say what. That's excellent. You're right. I was taken into an MK Ultra subproject in 1966, that was at that time known as Project Talent. I'm sure the name has changed several times over the years. And what people need to know is that there was and still is 172 subprojects under the umbrella of MK Ultra, and those are only the ones that are known about. So we don't really have a clue how many there is. Where do we start, Earl?
I don't know. I'm just wondering if maybe if whatever you have memory of or whatever you're aware of that happened, maybe kind of going back to how this all came about. What was the starting point that you can pinpoint in some way?
Sure. I'll see if I can Reader's Digest it down. I didn't get an answer as to how it all started until just a few years ago after my father passed away. And that's when I found out that he was in the CIA. And once I learned that, then a lot of things began to come together and make a lot more sense after that. As a lot of people know, they've done some research. A lot of these programs are generational. Hence, if my father was involved, then at least one of his sons would more than likely be involved. And unfortunately, it was me. What had happened is that in 1966, I was taken to an exam, and the ideas of that exam have changed over time as we have garnered more information on that. At the beginning, well, back up, what I had to do was put a puzzle together, okay? And what that puzzle was a picture of the double helix, the DNA. And a lot of us thought that that was extremely significant, that that's what it was, an understanding. But the more we thought about it, we think, and I think we're right about this, it was more of would I be a good receiver, because one of the project directors stood behind me the entire time that I was putting the puzzle together. And I might also add there were about a half dozen or so other children in the room with me. And after the test was completed, I was given something to drink. Once I drank it, I felt sleepy, and that's the end of the ride. I was out, and the next conscious memory I had was a little over 3 years later, when I was 9 years old. And then I was taken periodically from that time. The program was always reinforced. The training was increased, stepped up each time. By the time I was in my teens, I was used on assignments. And I know I was viably used until I was at least early 30s. And then after the automobile accident that I had, things kind of went haywire. So that's a Reader's Digest version.
Okay, and I think I'm hearing you right that MK Ultra and these other related programs are part of a CIA operation, mind control type of project. Is that correct?
That's correct. MK Ultra is German, actually. It originated in Nazi Germany. I'm sure most people have heard of Project Paperclip. That is right after the end of World War II, where the United States, along with the Vatican and their passport armada, was able to bring a lot of the scientists to this country. But what most people don't know is that they weren't just brought to this country. They were actually divided up between other countries, Great Britain, the Union. At that time, a lot went to Central and South America, and the experiments just continued. And that's how MKUltra began in this country.
Okay, and so that's what I was wondering, if that was a you know, something that came out of the Project Paperclip, all of those Nazi scientists and other folks that were kind of shuttled over here, kind of cloaked and brought over here secretly and set up completely with everything they need to continue their operation, except here instead of in Germany. Is that pretty much what you're saying
there? Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think most people will know the name Wernher von Braun, who was in charge of the Nazis' V-2 project during World War II. Well, he was made head of NASA. Okay, this was the guy that was over the Apollo program. And the list just goes on and on and on of all the Nazi scientists that were brought over here and given blank checks, carte blanche, continue the experiments, continue the projects, and make something happen with it. And they did. They did a good job.
Okay, and does this have any correlation or any connection or interaction between other agencies like NSA or some of the other agencies, or is it pretty much exclusively under CIA?
No. We were loaned out to several different alphabet soup agencies. What a lot of people don't know is, we have the FBI, we have the CIA, we have the NSA, we have ONI, we have PSI, on and on and on and on. But there are an agency or two that are well above the alphabet soup agencies, and they call the shots. They all answer to a top director. And the groups that came out of the projects that I was in falls under that directive. So, yeah, we were loaned out to several different agencies, as well as the military.
I see. Okay. And what do you believe that was actually maybe I should back up a minute. Are you familiar with the names Al Bielek or Phil Snyder?
I am. I've actually spoken to Al Bielek once about 12 years ago. He was familiar with the projects that I'm talking about. He wouldn't go into a lot of detail with me. All I know about Montauk Project is that my father was involved in the Montauk Project. And also he was involved with the sister project that was taking place at the same time in Mexico City.
Okay. And I understand that because Al Bielek, I've heard him speak before, and he used to speak of the Montauk boys and how they were, there's a whole operation there where they were tortured and brought to a certain point and split, and things were compartmentalized for them, and some of them didn't make it.
Yeah, exactly right. The group that I was in when we were taken in 1966 was what we call my generation, that was the 1966 generation. There was 1,000 of us. Less than half survived the initial process, because what is done is you go through physical torture to the point where your psyche has a choice to split off into an alternate personality for you to survive or you die. Now, people ask, well, why don't you just faint or black out? Well, one of the things the Nazi biochemists were very good at was the creation of drugs. And they came up with a drug cocktail that blocks the nerves in some way. It inhibits you from blacking out or from fainting. So you endure it, and you endure it until you die, or your mind, your consciousness will split off into a whole new personality. And at that time, God, more than half of us as children between 6 and 8 years old died.
Wow. Well, it sounds like that they could care less, too, as far as that goes.
No, they don't. Remember, we were an experiment, and a lot of people have brought up the question of, you know, why are some of you still alive? You're talking about it. Now there's other people talking about it. Well, as I said, we were an experiment. We're still an experiment. You know, we were never supposed to remember anything. We were supposed to be so compartmentalized that none of these memories would ever come out until we had reached advanced ages, when the mind begins to break down on its own and people just attribute what's being said as just wild stories from an elderly person. But in some of us, we didn't have to wait. The memory started to come back. Now, in my case, I was having the vivid nightmares, the reoccurring nightmares, from the time I was in my late teens onward. And then 13 years ago, I was involved in an automobile accident, a very severe accident that nearly killed me. And I was stuck in an MRI machine a few days later, and I don't exactly know what happened, but the magnetic resonance from the MRI machine and the cranial implant that I have didn't mesh, and there was feedback. And that brought down a lot of the barriers, especially in the memory area. And I literally went into panic. I clawed my way out of the MRI tunnel and was screaming and trying to fight my way out of the room. And what I saw was flashes of all these memories, you know, and everything I saw was a memory. And that's when, in an instant, the realization struck me that, guess what? These weren't nightmares. These were real events that you were reliving in your sleep. And that's when I started to put the numbers together, and I started to do research and go back and talk to people and confront people. And that's led me to the point that we're at right now, with me here talking to you.
Okay. Well, I know we do have one question from Joe in Los Angeles, if I might pose that at this point.
Sure.
What Joe says is, my older cousins are very famous rock musicians. They are completely detached from my already tiny family. The year I was born was their first album release. Throughout their career, there were songs with my name included. They live such secretive lives. The music they make has been powerful in my life, acting almost as a trigger. Have I been influenced by some strange MK Ultra influence?
I would have to ask a question myself. Was his father or parents or relatives involved in the military or in one of the Alphabet Soup agencies? If so, then that would make it more likely that it is. Without knowing more of Joe's background, I really can't answer that.
Maybe Joe will type in a little bit more information, and we can pick up on that when sure. when Joe does that. So if he does, then we'll certainly return to that. It's hard to from what I'm understanding is that this most of this is repressed from our conscious memory. So that, in fact, there can be a point where certain bits of it begin to bubble up. But for some people, I guess it stays submerged. Is that kind of the way it works?
Yeah. It also largely depends on to what degree you were utilized. If it's a situation to where, say, someone was utilized to do one job, maybe two jobs, they may go their entire lives without realizing anything. In my case, and a lot of the people that I deal with in their cases as well, we were used dozens of times or dozens of different assignments and jobs. And the more you're used and utilized, the harder it is to repress the memory and to stick them in the back recesses of the mind and try to put that brick wall that separates one personality from another. And over time, that brick wall begins to deteriorate, and your memories begin to overlap. And then begins the process of trying to determine which memory is real, which is yours, which is from an alternate personality. And the way that we've been doing that is by asking questions of other members, other people that we knew in these projects, and trying to find three points of reference to prove a memory. And that's why we, at least for myself, never speak of anything as fact unless I have three points of reference, three points of proof that that event took place. And it has to be two to three totally unrelated, people completely unknown to each other.
Okay. Well, then, do you have any conscious memory of the particular project you participated in, and if so, what do you remember that you were doing, or what do you suspect that you were doing?
I have a great deal of memories that I'm not allowed to talk about. I also have some memories that I talk about. I don't care if I'm allowed to or not. One of my main jobs was training other people. That was one of my main jobs. Also, gathering information. And we were some of the people that would drop behind enemy lines, quote unquote, so to speak, that, you know, if we were caught, teenage tourists out hiking in the mountains of Venezuela or something like that. There were several jobs that we were sent on that did involve assassination, yes. And as I told Jesse Ventura a couple of months ago, 12 years ago, I would never have said that. But we came a long ways in the past 12 years. One thing that I remember very vividly was former President George Bush being present in one of the training centers. And I'm talking about George the Elder, George Sr., and he would have been the director of the CIA at that time. So this goes back to a lot of high-ranking people, a lot of ex-presidents. I don't know how far up in the military it goes. I know it goes through the Office of Naval Intelligence because that's one of the divisions that we were attached to. But that's what a lot of people are wondering is about the Congress, the Senate, et cetera. I doubt if 2% have a clue.
Yeah.
You have to keep that plausible deniability out.
Yeah, that's it. I think the information is pretty much compartmentalized on a need-to-know basis only. So you may, people may be doing aware of a part of something and only fulfilling the part of their function that's needed in that overall scenario, but that's all they get to know.
Exactly right. And research the Manhattan Project, where they built the first atomic bomb. They had hundreds of scientists working on this thing, and nobody really knew what was going on except a handful of people. You know, each group worked on their specific project. They may have had supposition as to what they were doing, but they had no proof. So they really could not say what they were doing. And this was done primarily the same way. You know, need-to-know basis, and that's all.
Okay. One of the things that I know that is that you're going to be, which it actually starts tonight, with Jesse Ventura on True TV. He's going to have Conspiracy Theory, a series that's starting tonight, and I think it's at 10 p.m. in all the different time zones on True TV, TRU. And you're going to be on, let's see, what date? Do you have a date for when yours is going to be on?
I think I'm on January the 6th.
Oh, that's right. I see it here now. Yeah, January 6th is what it says.
I'm in next to the last show.
Okay. Yeah.
Who knows? It may get canceled before they ever come up to mine.
Who knows? Yeah, the powers that be probably won't like the exposure that's going to go on. I guess it's starting with the HAARP project tonight, which that's
right.
A whole other interesting subject, and moving on into other areas. But it describes you, as I see now on your website, it says Manchurian Candidate premieres Wednesday, January 6th at 10 p.m., and that's like you said, if it's still going then, if no one has axed it. I imagine some people are going to, it's going to really rattle their cages, and they're going to make some phone calls and try to get this thing stopped.
I will guarantee that. Or who knows, with TV ratings, the ratings may be so low it just bottoms out. I hope not. I hope the episode gets to air.
Yeah, I guess they're going to cover 9/11, and like
right.
I said, HAARP tonight, global warming, that whole scam, Big Brother, Secret Societies, 2012, those sorts of things. So that'll be very interesting. I'm just wondering, could you tell us a little bit about what kind of physical performance or function that is beyond the norm that you're able to do? Just maybe some examples of it so we can kind of picture it in our minds, what you're able to accomplish in some of these other subjects that have been programmed like that.
Yeah. One of the things people can do, and I'll explain, is go to my website and go on the left there where it says personal trainer and check out the weightlifting videos. Now, I am not going to sit here and claim to be the strongest man in the world, but you know, I'm far from that. Now, I'll explain why those videos are up there. I mentioned the accident that I had 13 years ago. My neck was shattered in three places, C2, C3, and C4, with damage to C5 and 6. I had to drink coffee out of a straw. There were days I couldn't feed myself. And I had two of the top neurosurgeons in the country tell me, get used to it, because it won't get any better. It'll only get worse. Well, as anyone who's followed this story understands, I have implants throughout my body. What these implants do, their function is to increase speed and power and endurance when need be, i.e. fight or flight, life or death situation, or when activated remotely by the controllers. They cannot do that now because, as I alluded to with the MRI scan, they did not mesh. Okay, so the cranial implant does not function like it used to. What happened is the implants created new neural pathways that enabled me to overcome an injury that I should not have been able to overcome. And as far as the question of, well, let's go back to 25 years ago when I was absolutely utilized on a regular basis. The implant in the shoulder was specifically designed to increase speed and power in the right arm. Think about how that would help anyone in a combat situation. Okay. You go from being able to, say, picking up 80 pounds in one hand to being able to pick up 200 to 300 pounds in one hand. And it also increased the punching power. There was once that my right hand was measured in its PSI power, in the punching power, at 1,800 to 2,000 PSI. That's a lot of punching power. Okay, but I was being measured and I was being pushed and forced and made very angry during this time to get that reaction. Can I do that now? I don't know. Get the implant kicked in, probably, but let's face it, I'm 50 years old now. You know, I was tested through all this. I was 25. But as far as what the implants could do to increase, it just increases everything. I mean, go days without sleep, go days without eating, endurance off the scale, those kind of things. I really don't know what else to add to that.
Well, it sounds like it just gave you almost like superhuman powers. I mean,
That's correct, but I do have need to add in short burst.
Okay, so you couldn't sustain that. I mean, obviously, you couldn't go all day just in
No, absolutely not, because the implants, what they do is they increase the neural stimulus, okay? But even though they do that, the human body can only withstand so much. And I would know that after an assignment, when I would come through into my personality, now personality prima, that I would be starving. I would have to eat immediately.
Did you also get exhausted?
Totally exhausted.
You really need to rest because you would have used up so much of your energy, I guess.
Well, and the other thing is, and this is on X-ray, my adrenal glands are half again the size of some of normal. Okay, they're much larger than normal. And anyone knows that has gone through anything where their body's been pumped full of adrenaline, once you come down from that adrenaline high, you're hungry. So what the implants would do, they would work in conjunction with the rest of your systems, with the adrenal glands and everything. So once the assignment was over, you had to get sustenance back into your system. And like I said, I would be ravenous. You know, give me steak, give me potato, give me everything I can get in front of me.
Makes sense. It really does. Well, I just want to remind everybody that we are speaking with Duncan Afinian, who is part of Project Talent of MK Ultra Mind Control Project. And we do have, let's see, this is interesting. I think it almost sounds like maybe it's in code, and Duncan, maybe you'll either know who this is or what this is about. It says POPS in Pahrump. I assume that's Pahrump, Nevada.
Right.
Duncan, you are so right about the 3 points of reference regarding any memories. We went to Venezuela when we were in St. Thomas, and Aaron and Allie were with us. I have partial memories of that event. Do you have any partial memories of that assignment, POPS?
I do have some. I don't wish to go into that right now because that was a rather nasty memory, and we need to really get it pinned down to exactly what happened and what happened to whom.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I figured this person was saying something in a way you'd know what they were saying, but I don't.
I do. I understood it, yeah.
Okay, we'll leave that one where it is at this point, and details to follow at some future date. Okay. I guess what would come to mind is that it might maybe if oh, I know you're actually going to be part of the MK Ultra Mind Control Conference that's coming up. Let's see, I guess it's in Boston, right? In February.
Right.
You and a few others are going to be there presenting, and sounds like it's going to be quite a program. That's pretty much open to the public?
It is, absolutely.
Okay. And I guess there's just some information here on the site. Oh, I see. It's mkultraconference.com
is their
website. And I don't think we gave out yours. Maybe at this point, if you want to give out your website and any other contact information that you choose to give out, then that would be great.
Sure. It's just duncanolfinnan.com.
Okay.
And anybody can contact me right on the website. All the contact info. There's a link there to contact me on.
Oh, great. Okay, that's great. And just so that folks will know, of course, that's www.duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, and then Ophinian is spelled O-F-I-N-I-O-A-N.com. So maybe I'll spell that Ophinian again. I know it can be confusing exactly how it's spelled, Duncan, and then OFINIOAN.com.
So, dang, those Celts are coming up with those funky names.
And there's a lot of interesting information on there that will help correlate with the things that we've been talking about. And, I think that the Manchurian candidate idea has been, Hollywood has really kind of gone to town on that. And, of course, there was the Manchurian Candidate movie, and then it was a remake of it, kind of an update more recently. And then, of course, we have the current movie that's kind of hitting the nail a little closer on the head, and that's The Men Who Stare at Goats. I have to admit, I haven't seen that yet. I'm looking forward to see it. I just haven't had a chance to get over to do it yet. Have you seen it by chance, Duncan?
I haven't. And honestly, I haven't seen either of the Manchurian Candidate movies. I watch very little. I honestly do. I tried to watch the first Bourne Identity movie. When it first came out, people were contacting me saying, my God, you have to watch this movie. There's so much in it that you've been talking about. And let me, thing I need to add is I've been doing interviews on this for almost 13 years. And I was talking about this stuff way before the Bourne Identity movies. And there's nothing there. Nobody copies who. I mean, this information's been out there. I just wanted to get that out there because a lot of people have tried to say that I was trying to copy the movies. No. But I was okay with the movie up until the point to where the character Bourne was in Switzerland, and he puts his hand on the palm read scanner. And at that point, I broke out into cold sweats and had to leave the house. And I really don't know what happened. I don't know what the trigger was. But that was the end of me watching the Bourne Identity movie.
Well, it probably touches close to home, and it may start to trigger things that you just don't want to have come up for you quite yet. It needs maybe to unfold in its own timing and in its own way.
That's an excellent point. We're still, a lot of us are still pulling memories back, and we're still having flashbacks. We're not done by any means of the word. And a lot of us have memories that we'll never talk about. I mean, they were just so horrendous and so hard to think about, we'll never discuss it. But we do want to discuss everything that we can because we want these programs to stop. There is no reason under heaven and earth that a government or anyone else can take a child, put it through the torture and the abuse that we went through to create a little soldier. There's no excuse for that anywhere.
Well, and this is not the thing is, it's not like a regular military project. I mean, there are soldiers, and you know, the Army, Navy, whatever. There's Marines, all of that type of thing, and there's that. But this was a special, what you call a black budget project, more of an underground, hidden, secret type of operation that was not any part of the normal military operations. So it's a very sinister thing. I guess I'm not sure where I was going with that, but it's very different from what you normally think would be a soldier.
Right.
What do you think that they were actually? What do you think their end result is? How many like you do you estimate there are out there? And what do you think was the eventuation, the final use of these soldiers, or was there going to be a final use?
Okay, let me try to condense this down. In my generations, my understanding, there's only about 10 of us left. Some of us have come together, and we do communicate, and we do share memories and ideas of everything. There was 70s version, 80s version, 90s version, now there's version today. It's just like anything else. You try to improve each generation. And we think, some of us believe, that the end result was to have the perfect, soulless soldier, group of soldiers, an army, if you will, to protect the people in power and who will be in power when everything hits the fan toward the time of the end. And I think that's a very good assumption.
Okay. Well, it sounds like then that let me ask you this, if I might. We actually have a question from Allison in Fairfield, and she says, I wanted to ask Duncan if he could elaborate on why they use children in the programs. Thanks.
Because children are basically a blank slate. A 6 or 7 year old child, by and large, for the most part, don't know right from wrong. And children are easier to dispose of. And taken as a child, then you have that child's life. You have their lifetime to experiment with. As where you take an adult who are already set in their ways, they have their mindsets, their neural paths already glued in, as it were. It's more difficult to get the end result that they want. Like a baby's skull, when it's born, isn't closed together. A child's mind at 6 and 7 isn't closed together yet. It's easier to manipulate.
Okay. Well, they it sounds like it's the type of thing where you that since they're so influenceable, they're so pliable, flexible, that they can be more easily manipulated in the exact ways that they're seeking to manipulate and program them.
Right, exactly.
It sounds like also that once someone is programmed in this manner, then they have no compunction. They're almost like robots where they perform whatever the function is and get it done for these people without there being any conscience getting in the way or any sense of what they have done or might do. They just perform. That's correct.
Yeah. Case in point, one of the biggest ways that I was activated was via telephone. And there was numerous times when people would tell me, days, weeks, sometimes months later, I answered the phone, I was on it for a few seconds, would hang it up, pack a bag, and leave.
Hmm.
And I'll be gone sometimes days, sometimes weeks, sometimes months.
So they would program you with responding to a particular word or maybe set of words, a phrase or something, whatever it was, or maybe a tone that they played that they...
Exactly. Like. Yes, exactly.
And that would just trigger you. It's like all of a sudden you just you're going to carry out that exact function, whatever it was to be.
Well, what would happen is I would switch personalities. And what they did is they instilled more than one personality. Personality Prima is the one talking to you right now. As you said in the opening monologue, Omega Unit 197 was a combat unit. But there's a couple of more in there that are what's known as minor personalities, like minor programmings, that will be activated to get me from point A to point B, i.e. one time I was triggered, I went from my house to the airport. Now, once I was on the plane, landed where I was supposed to be, they would trigger the next personality to take over from there. And then there would be the subliminal programming that would be like when you reach your home, switch. And this particular case in point, I woke up in my driveway 3 days later in my car.
Wow.
And we checked the odometer. I lived exactly 11 miles from the airport. My odometer had only increased 22 miles.
Hmm.
It's a safe bet. It's a very safe bet as to where I went.
Yeah. So it's just no memory of it, only remembering or only conscious once you've come back and it's complete, the program's that particular function is complete. Would they ever, say, abduct kids and then put them through this, or would it typically be through family connections, a family or friend or somebody that has access to a child? And do it that way, or was it kind of a mix, all sorts of different ways?
I would have to say it was a mix. They wanted specific bloodlines, and exactly why, I have ideas, and we came to a lot of conclusions, but that's a whole show in itself. Now, there were some experiments to be performed where the chance of the unit, i.e. the child, would have no chance of survival. In those cases, I think all we have to do is look at the FBI's own statistics. Hundreds of thousands of people go missing every year, never to be heard from. Hundreds of thousands of children go missing. A lot of those can be attributed to custodial interference type thing, family squabbles. Once those are eliminated, what about all the thousands of children that go missing every year, never to be heard from again? They're going somewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, this would be a whole other subject too, and there are people that can speak to it, but I understand that there are underground facilities, and sometimes children are taken there for various purposes, whatever experimentation or whatever it may be that they're doing, and they're who knows, maybe there are other operations too that are similar to the one you were a part of that are going on in other areas and other realms. These people that you were defending or working for, or performing these functions for, that you believe that they want you to be a protection for them, I guess they would be some of the most elite on the planet. This is probably some of the ones that people call those that are the people that are the top points of the New World Order or the Illuminati or whatever you want to call that group that's controlling the planet.
Right. Correct. As I spoke of the memory that I had with former President George Bush in one of the training facilities, there was a general standing beside of President Bush. And the general was not pleased with what was going on, but George Bush thought it was hilarious. And I was no more than 14 at the time. This would have been circa 1974. about the time he was director of the CIA. So, yeah, the military is definitely involved in this. I also believe, and I have no proof of this, I'm just going to throw this out there as my belief, my opinion, that there are also experiments like this that are being conducted via the private sector. And I have no proof of it. That's just my belief.
Is that the same people, or who do you think's doing it?
Well, let's face it. There's a lot of people out there with a lot of money who want protection. And once something works, duplicate it. And if they can't get it from the military, make their own.
Okay, that makes sense. That's probably what's going on with that. Do you think that they're upset at what you're doing, and do you ever have concern for your particular safety?
I did. Let me put it this way. My oldest daughter is 21 years old. When she was 19, her house was blown up.
Her house was blown up?
It was blown up, man. I mean, it blew the roof off. And it was a shape charge set right on top of her furnace. And I was there right after the fire department finished. I talked to the fire inspector, and we agreed on that. That's a two-edged sorted question, and I can only give loaded answers to that. In some ways, they're very afraid of the information that I and others are giving out. But then, on the other hand, they're delighted at it, because I would dare to say that half of the people listening to this interview right now are thinking, what a nutcase. In that respect, I'm doing the government a favor. Okay? I'm throwing mud onto a campfire. But to the other side, it's also helping to wake people up who were in these projects, who have been having the reoccurring nightmares, the memories, et cetera, et cetera. And that's how a lot of these people have came to me and to us, and we've all gotten together. And to go along with that, excuse me, what a lot of people don't know is that there has been a war inside the intelligence community for a very long time. That war came to a peak in 1982, right after Ronald Reagan was shot. Keep in mind, George Bush was former director of the CIA. George Bush is part of the power elite. He had his own following inside the military-industrial complex. When Reagan was shot, the alphabet soup agencies literally split into two different camps. And you can call them white hats, black hats if you want. I don't call either one of them white. They're both after the same thing, and they use basically the same motives and agendas to get what they want. Well, people like me are stuck right in the middle of this war between these two sides. One side wants to utilize us. One side wants to off us. It's that simple. After some lengthy discussions with some people a lot smarter about this than me several years ago, we came to the conclusion that it was safer to talk about it than not talk about it. And so far, that's worked. Will it continue to work? We'll see.
Well, I think, all in all, people are waking up faster than I can ever remember. And they're able to accept a larger swath of information sometimes before things that would poo-poo or say, oh, that's crazy, crazy stuff, you're Looney Tunes and all that. A lot of people saying, I don't know, some of this stuff makes sense. I mean, I'm beginning to hear that from more and more people. So they may have a lot to worry about as time goes on and more people put the information out. I mean, I'm kind of surprised that Jesse Ventura is going to be able to have that program, even if it does just run a few times, getting the information out. It's getting out to a large group of people through more of a major outlet instead of just some alternative media. So there's a lot of hope with some of the things that are going on. I want to remind everybody that we're speaking with Duncan O'Finnion, and if you do have a question for Duncan and you're on the conference bridge line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll be able to unmute your line so you can speak with him. And then if you're online, listening to the webinar that way, there's a question box a little bit down on the page. Type your question in and hit submit, and we'll see the question and be able to ask it. I think we all enjoy the dialogue and knowing what's of interest to people. I can only guess the questions that would be asked, and we just kind of follow along that way. But I'm fascinated by this, and sometimes in just thinking about it, Duncan, I don't even know hardly what to ask next. It's just 50 questions in my mind at one time, and I don't even know where to go next.
I understand. I understand.
But I would say that one of the things that I would wonder about is, do you remember any of the other people that were involved as far as some of the high-profile people, like either high military personnel or political figures or anyone else that we might recognize, or either who they are by name or who they are by their standing in society?
I would say Bush Sr. was the highest. I do remember Rumsfeld's name being tossed around quite a bit. And I also remember Cheney's name being tossed around quite a bit. These guys have been part of big government, my God, for over 30 years.
Yeah.
As far as the military goes, I remember seeing a lot of admirals, a lot of generals, but I wouldn't recognize any of them. The only one in the military that I know that was directly involved in this was Admiral Sisko, Admiral Eugene Sisko, who was Director of Office of Naval Intelligence at one time. Admiral Sisko and I are related. That goes back quite a long ways. But other than that, God, I really don't know.
Okay. All right, yeah, I can imagine it's not the type of thing that's going to be real out in the open as to all of that. But, I've heard correlating information from other sources about the Bush Sr.'s involvement in so many things, and they're usually quite, as some people would describe them, quite diabolical. He's not the nice man that he portrays on the surface.
He's not. And to that end, we have to go all the way back to his father, Prescott Bush, and his dealings in World War II. So on that side of the river, it goes back to quite a bit of history.
Yeah, he's come up in so many different places as far as the things he's been involved around. His name has even come up around the Kennedy assassination, and where he was that day and who he was connected with and what was going on around him.
Right.
So that's interesting too. And then, of course, being the head of the CIA and eventually being president and being involved in a lot of different operations, not the nicest guy, not the friendly, real nice next-door neighbor that smiles and shares tea with you,
Well, he does smile a lot, but
yeah.
I think it's for all the wrong reasons.
Yes, I think he's kind of gloating of what he thinks he's accomplished. Mike in Occidental, I don't know where that is, but he said, ask about walking through walls. He mentioned this in another interview, so it must be someone that heard you before.
Oh, my God. That was something that happened several years ago that the witness and I related to someone in private, and we don't know how in the world it got all over the internet. No, I don't mind mentioning it. What had happened is I was in bed asleep, and I was in the house of my half-sister. And she was in the kitchen, and her youngest son had a nightmare and got up screaming and was trying to get out of the front door. Well, there was a wall separating me from the door, and she had a straight line into the kitchen. She took off running, and all I remember is reaching up, you know, propping myself up on my left arm, reaching forward, and in her words, I cut her off. I came through the wall, through the couch, and cut her off and got to the kid before she did. I don't remember going through the wall. And I can't explain how it happened. But it did happen.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. That'd be a stunning thing.
The group that I was taking in was Project Talent. And like I said, when I alluded to that the program, the people in charge were looking for readers, they were looking for people who could hear the thoughts of others, means to be able to take mental psychic commands, as it were. I'm trying not to make it sound more science fiction than it already is. This is what I'm trying to do here. But it's going through the wall, yeah, I'm afraid so. And I don't want to do it again. I really don't.
Yeah, I would imagine. I bet you don't. I understand that you wrote a letter to Barack Obama, and I guess it was long enough ago that if there was going to be some type of answer, there would. But did anything happen from that you can discern?
Not a thing. We sent that out November the 11th, and it went out to Barack Obama, Joe Biden, all of the United Nations Security Councils. It went out to about 20 leaders of foreign governments, all 100 U.S. senators. It went to the Congress. We couldn't get it to Hillary Clinton. All her email addresses bounced back. But it went out to literally hundreds of people in government around the world. We have gotten zero replies.
Right. Well, those that know that this type of thing goes on, of course, would ignore it, and they know good and well they're not going to touch that. And anyone that doesn't know about it would just say, okay, another nutcase, right?
Right.
But I imagine you've had to deal with that over and over again. But are you finding more of a receptivity lately, say maybe even in the last year, than you had found prior to this? Or have you noticed?
I would have to answer that in the affirmative. Absolutely. When we first started going public with this, I think being labeled a nutcase was the nicest thing I was called. And then what happened a couple of years ago, everybody remembers the release of the CIA family jewels, all those newly declassified documents. Well, there was one page in all those hundreds of pages where the CIA admitted to paying off parents to use their children in these experiments. And they used one particular case in point, a little girl, where they admitted to using drugs, hypnosis, and electric shock therapy. The CIA flat admitted it. Once those papers were released, then, as you just said, a lot of people began to accept it a little more.
I think one of the hardest things for people to wrap their mind around is that they think of how they think and how they feel, and that they have a conscience, and that they wouldn't do certain things that they draw a line as far as what they would do. They may, you know, tell the white lies. They may have done dishonest things. They may, whatever it is that they do, but they say anyone, you know, who is a human wouldn't do certain things to other people, you know, and yet these types of things come up about what they would do is just so, I mean, I just consider it so diabolical, so awful, you know, to think that they would do this type of thing. Why do you think it is that there are those who can do that? What has brought them to that point? Do you have any speculation on that?
Gee, I guess we'll be bouncing around the idea of good versus evil. But, you know, unfortunately, that's really what it comes down to. When you have a group of people who are in power and will use every means at their disposal to stay in power, there's no end to what they will do. And, you know, this kind of behavior isn't new. I mean, it goes all the way back through human history. But with the advent of modern technology, it just becomes a lot easier for people to do. And, God, there are some really, truly evil people out there in the world. And you made an excellent point. And thankfully, your point is correct, that the majority of the humans on this planet, the reason that they can't wrap their mind around something like this is because they can't do it. They're not capable of this kind of evil. So that's a good trade-off for me. I would rather these people call me a nutcase than to be capable of that kind of evil. I'll take that trade-off.
Sure. That makes sense. I would say that it's almost like these people who can do these types of things, it's almost like they're a soulless person, you know? It's just...
I would have to agree with that.
Yeah, they're almost not like the typical consciousness at all. But do you think what do you think is we're going to see next in addition to this whole scenario with the super soldiers and the agenda of those that utilize them? Where do you think this is all headed?
I think we will more than likely see the newest generation of these soldiers used, and I think it's very likely that we will see them used against the American population. As I said at the conference in L.A. back in September, you don't build an army unless you intend to use it. And one of the things is you can take 12 of these guys, just imagine this, 12 people physically augmented, emotionally soulless, that can do the damage of, say, 100 regular soldiers. And that's the idea. And my greatest fear is that they're going to be turned loose on the general population. And what people need to keep in mind, not all of these people look American. They're not all American. I fully remember being young, not 10, 11 years old, being trained with kids from all over the world. So this is not something that is exclusive to this country. All the major countries have done experiments very much like this.
Okay. And you've seen probably some technology that would just stun people that exist, right? I mean, if you've had access to witness or be aware of some very unusual technologies?
Some. That's a good lead-in. A lot of people have brought up the point that in the 1960s, we didn't have the technology to do the micro implants. Well, do some research. The first cranial implant ever used successfully was performed in Sweden in 1923. It was done on a prison inmate who was say, overly violent, and that he could control his violence via the cranial implant. Just put up through the nose, through the sinus cavity, up into the frontal lobe. 1923. So we looked at technology moving forward, say the mid-1960s, the 70s, all the way now to 2009, 2010. I mean, the concept of, my God, the technology that they have today is unreal. And also remember, the military-industrial complex stays at least one generation to two generations ahead of us. By the time we get something, it's obsolete.
Hmm. Well, would that also include some exotic weaponry?
Plasma rifles, most definitely. I do remember seeing plasma rifles being used. Chemical and biological agents, gender-specific biological agents, race-specific biological agents. And it just goes on and on. But the plasma rifle is one thing that I absolutely remember seeing used.
Hmm. Okay. Linda, in Peterborough, Ontario, I assume that's Canada, what kind of indoctrination or soul damage would have been done to the political masters to enable them to act without soul or conscience? That's, we kind of touched on that before.
Yeah, you know, it goes back as where I was used because it was generational. These people who are doing this, it's generational for them as well. And when you're brought up in that kind of environment, it's natural to you. You know, like we talk about George Bush Sr., what a little devil he is. Well, he was raised that way. You know, Prescott Bush was no angel. Going on back. And these families have been in power for so many generations. You know, they may change the name a little bit, but it's still the same family. It's natural to them. They don't really know any different. And it's a good point. Soulless, you know, they have a soul. It's just black. You just can't see through it.
Yeah. Mike, Occidental asks, do you have any visions of the future, and what is your role in any upcoming events, and what is the best preparation for the rest of us? That's a pretty good question.
My role in future events, I don't have a clue. I'm just trying to get this information out to anyone who's willing to listen to it. I have seen things of the future. I stopped talking about visions a long time ago. But I will throw this out there. There's going to be a very dark time in this country, and it's going to be very soon. I'm not going to put a date. I'm not going to say you're going to wake up 2012 and it's all going to be over. I don't know that. But these people, these two groups are going to have to finally make their final move, their final struggle. And it's going to have to end with a winner, one side or the other. And we're in the middle of it. And that's going to be a very, very dark time. As far as what anyone can do, I still maintain what I have been saying for years. If at all possible, it's better to have the ability to be mobile, to be able to pick up and move at a minute's notice. Now, I'm not saying pack your house in a U-Haul and truck, but just to be able to get out of the area that you're in.
Well, how many would you estimate there are of the super soldiers?
I have no clue. I really don't. I have no clue.
You think it's pretty significant, or, I mean...
I would have to say a lot, a very large amount. But as far as putting a number on it, I really can't.
Okay, and you believe that through the years they just continue to program more and more and more. Not only that,
but they've improved. Remember, we were an experiment, and the experiment continued. And you try to improve your results, and that's what they've done. So I hate to use this term, human beings, but the model that's out there now is so far advanced that to put me down on the bottom of the ladder again.
Hmm. Well, do you feel that there's any possibility that you might be triggered and go ahead and perform for them, or do you feel that you've reached the point where you've made yourself immune to that possibility, or you're uncertain?
I would hope that I have made myself immune to that possibility. We make conscious decisions, and over the past few years, I've made several. And one of those decisions was to never do anything for these people, ever. Now, could they do a snatch and grab on me and put more implants in? Yes. I'm not going to sit here and say that, no, that's not possible. That is possible. That's very possible. Do I think they will? No, because as I said, two sides are fighting against each other. One side wants us alive, one side wants us dead, and we're stuck in the middle. I would have to sit here and say I really hope I can't be triggered for anything like that.
Okay.
I don't think I can, but I don't think any of us can state that unequivocally 100%.
Right. I mean, how would you know? That's true. You couldn't really for sure. Have any of the folks that had implants put into them, have they had them removed?
Well, Dr. Roger Lear has been performing implant removals for some time, but I don't think he's removing quite the same implants that are in us. I tried to have the one in my left hand removed several years ago. I went to three different surgeons, actually, to have it removed. One just flat refused. Another said if he did, I would probably lose the use of two of my fingers. And another one said, you didn't know it was there and it didn't bother you before, so why mess with it now? So I had three surgeons refuse to remove it.
Okay.
And I'm not going to let somebody go in and mess around cranial-wise.
I don't blame you. That's a little tricky. It definitely is. I do have a question from Ron in Irvine. Ask how many, I don't know how to pronounce this word, Crimara/ human soldiers? I just asked that. You didn't know for sure how many. Is that a name that's given for him, Crimara?
I'm not actually sure. I'd have to see it.
Yeah, it's spelled Crymara. I don't know.
Yeah, I understand what he's asking, what he's talking about. And again, as to the number, I honestly could not give a number, but I would fathom a guess that it's an extremely large number.
Okay. And Ron also asked another question that sounds a little bit assumptive because we haven't brought anything up about anything in this conversation, but he just simply asked, will Stargate be open soon?
I don't touch Stargate.
Okay, so you do know about that, and this must be someone that either knows you or knows about this a little bit, so okay.
Crap. You can't run from everything forever, can you? There are Stargates. They're not exactly like you saw on the TV show or the movie, but they do exist. and I think I understand what he's asking. And I'll answer this, Ron. I hope not. And we'll leave it at that.
It sounds like it's not a good thing.
No.
It's the trigger of something pretty ominous and not so nice.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, we can certainly leave it at that. Okay. I would say at this point, I know we've been going for a while now, and if certainly I think that maybe this type of topic we could probably go on the rest of the day and then some. And I think we've certainly opened up enough questions and enough dialogue here for people to investigate a little bit further. What I would say at this point, if you would, Duncan, let's give your contact information out once more, your website.
Sure.
And people can then check this out further. Certainly, what would you say some of the searches that they could do, say if they wanted to Google and pull up some interesting things that would correlate what you're talking about, maybe share a few of those? And
on the website, there's a reference page.
Oh, okay.
With a lot of reference material there where they can go to links to talk about this. But as far as doing a Google search, just Google MKUltra. Google mind control, Google Project Paperclip, and Google the family jewels. As a matter of fact, there is a website totally devoted to the family jewels, and you can read all the declassified documents there.
Okay, that's great. And again, your website is duncanofinian.com, and I encourage everybody to check it out. I would say with this, as well as any guest that we have ever had or will have in the future, take the information in. Don't discount or poo-poo anything, because there, with anything that's said, there is something to be learned. It very well may be true in total or in part. I know some of it can be quite fantastic to a lot of people, but there is so much going on all over the place that is just would bewilder people, and I discover more all the time. But if you do your own research and you convince yourself from your own research with the facts that you find and what you know to be true, then that's the thing to do. Don't blindly follow anyone. Even your first impression of something, don't blindly follow that, but check into it further. So with that, I want to say that I really appreciate that, Duncan, you taking the time to share this with us today and everyone that has been hearing it. What I would say is that if there's a final thought, anything that you'd like to share with the folks before we close it off, now would be a good time for that. Anything that you had intended to mention or just a parting thought, then that would be great.
I think you summed it up very nicely. That was well said. Do your own research. I'm not the only one out there talking about this particular subject matter. Just research, and, draw your own conclusions, and just don't stop, because there's more information being released almost every day, and keep watching, because the CIA does do damage control, and they do what we call advanced damage control. They'll release and declassify documents and information just before, like, the conference that we're going to have in February in Boston. Watch for something to be declassified before then.
I would imagine that would happen. Let's see. I do have a couple of quick things here. Dave, a.k.a. Pops Parump, at the Awake and Aware conference in Burbank in September, Bill Ryan mentioned that two of the newest generation of super soldiers can lift an Abrams tank It was also mentioned that there were at least 15,000 of the latest generation super soldiers, and they will most likely be turned against the American peoples. Does that ring true with you?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, all right. And then Ron in Irvine says, micro-injectable control robots are available and in use since 1980 for mood, fear, death, and control. Does that ring true?
That's correct.
Okay. All right, well, I just, you know, I wanted, and oh, gosh, it looks like everybody's trying to get a last thing in here. Linda.
Ron's speaking about nanotechnology.
Okay, nanotechnology, and that's a huge field. There's a lot to that, I know. Linda in Peterborough says, what's the best way we can support your wonderful service in bringing these calls to us? Oh, I see. She's asking me as the moderator. I would just say that, you know, certainly bring us any information you have. You can, you know, contact us and send us information on bodies of information, people who would be guests, people who have written books, research, all sorts of things. Let us know of those, and we'll look into them, and we'll bring them to you if it seems to make sense. We want to continue to get the word out. We do that through our publication. We do that through these webinars, and we do it through, you know, other special programs and activities that we do. I want to thank you again, Duncan, and everyone that's been on this webinar today. And I want to invite you to be with us again tomorrow when we have Paula Stang, who's the daughter of the late Alan Stang, which many of you know as a writer and a prolific writer and speaker, speaking on central banks, the Great Depression, the New Deal, fiat currency, fractional reserve banking, and leading up to today's problems that we see as a result of all of that. So with that, I thank you again, Duncan, and I thank you everyone else, and we'll see you tomorrow, and have a great day.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. It's been my pleasure.
Okay.
The moderator has left the conference.